Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, what's up, and welcome to Movie Dumpster Season 6, Episode 6. Today we're talking about Evil Dead Trap from 1988, directed by Toshihiro Ikeda. I'm Joel Escola.
And I'm Sean O'Rourke.
Welcome to the dumpster.
So, Joe.
Yeah?
It's not the Evil Dead.
It's the Evil Dead trap.
Yes.
You're trapped by the Deadites, right?
Just in time, kind of, for Evil Dead Rise, kind of.
Afterwards, yeah.
Yes.
This episode was supposed to come out sooner than later, and we're at the later stage, but it's still poignant and acceptable.
Yes, and it's also something we've talked about covering for many years, so regardless, I'm very excited to talk about this film.
Do you have a fucking mouse in your pocket?
Yes, I took your joke. You're still bitter about that. Go check out the Garbage Pail Kids episode to understand that reference.
I'm just busting your balls. And yes, we have been talking about this one for a while. This one, well, we'll get to that in a second. But first, just want to let you know, if you want more Movie Dumpster content, including an ad-free audio version of the show, you can head over to patreon.com/moviedumpster and support the show for just as little as $2 a month.
And for no money at all, if you're watching this video on YouTube, leave a like on it and share it with your friends. And if you're listening on your favorite podcast app, leave us 5 stars and, get the word out. Get us out of the dumpster into more eardrums, eyeballs, and everything in between.
Oh, yeah, man. You got to grow that dumpster community, baby.
Absolutely.
And if you're looking for more updates on the show or what we got coming up, always head over to those socials. @MovieDumpster on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. But yeah, so for this episode, we're going to try a couple little different things.
Yeah.
As you will see as we go. And with that being said, let's get into some Evil Dead Trap.
Yes.
Let's start from the top with this.
Okay.
Is
the top Sam Raimi? Is that the joke? Is Bruce Campbell's head?
No, actually, I was going to say how we discovered this film and like how we shared it as kids. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So this is the Synapse Asian Cult Cinema Extreme Horror Collection that they had dropped in 2005, which was the year we graduated. That I graduated.
He did. Him and his mouse.
Yes, me and the mouse. So Synapse had put these films that are in this set out individually in 2000, and then they did a box set in 2005. However, I bought the box set. Now, I bought the box set specifically because I wanted Entrails of a Virgin, and I wanted Entrails of a Beautiful Woman, which were two Japanese films that I was after.
Okay.
They're like infamously, like almost like the guinea pig stuff type style movies. Are you familiar with guinea pig?
I don't know.
Guinea pig are like, it's like extreme gore movies, right? Low budget Asian horror.
Sure,
cinema.
Like that's basically what that is. Okay.
Yeah. We might talk about those eventually at some point. In the set came with Entrails of a Virgin and Entrails of a Beautiful Woman are Organ and Evil Dead Trap.
I remember Organ. We're not covering that, but that's a very weird splatter body horror movie for
what
sure.
What a fucking weird movie Organ is. And there was a time where I grabbed this and Sean and I busted through this whole collection.
Yes.
And this was my first exposure to Evil Dead Trap. I had never heard of it. I never saw it. I think until Synapse put out the DVD, you could not get Evil Dead Trap in the US, like in the US with subtitles and shit.
Probably not. I mean, obviously there was VHS tapes out there of different films in that genre or subgenre, Asian horror.
Well, Japan had the VHS, but it was a Japanese VHS.
Well, I'm saying specifically around that time, early 2000s, is when a lot of that stuff finally got out to the States.
Yeah.
And we got all that stuff on DVD, whether it was through Synapse or at your local video store. You were like, holy shit, I couldn't get this 10 years
it
ago.
It was the big boom, dude. You had Synapse.
Anime
had,
even, too.
You had Code Red. You had Synapse. You had, what was the other one? There's a bunch of them. I don't want to say unearthed.
Home Video Express?
Home Video Express was serving it to you, motherfucker. Yeah, sure was. But we didn't have all these. Those were our boutique labels at the time. You know what I mean? And Synapse is one of the OGs. And they put out such great content. And they put out a lot of like Frank Henenlotter stuff that was priceless at the time. That's when we watched. The first time you saw Brain Damage was on a Synapse disc.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. So we're watching all these movies and we get to Evil Dead Trap. Now, we had never heard about it. And we're like, what the fuck? Evil Dead Trap? Like, is this like a ripoff or what's the deal here?
Right.
Turns out that Evil Dead Trap was just the stateside name for it.
Oh.
It's not even the real name. We'll get into
That's
that.
That's a little surprising to me because of stuff we may talk about, because there's definitely some Evil Dead homages in this film, or it feels like it at least.
Yeah, the original Japanese title, I'm going to butcher this. If you saw our Ultraman episode, I'm not very good at this.
You're trying.
Shiryo ni Wana, which translates into the Book of the Necronomicon. No, that's not what happened. The Trap of the Dead Spirits.
Okay.
So I think that's kind of in line with it, because the Kandarian demons, they possess people, and this has a spirit kind of ghost sort of.
Not really, but
okay. Well, we'll get to it and we'll kind of bust that down. But where was I going with that? We didn't know what to expect. So we popped it in and we watched this, and like, the whole movie was great.
Sure.
But then, like, when that fucking third act happens, we were just like, oh my God. Like,
yeah, that's the same reaction I had the other day when I rewatched it for the first time in like 15 years. And I was like, oh, I forgot about this. Oh my God.
I knew it was coming, but I was like,
I completely forgot.
I knew it was coming, but like, I couldn't remember. Because I hadn't watched
like the semantics of it, maybe.
Yeah, I haven't watched it in a very long time.
Sure.
So that was a fun time. This is another one of those movies that we kind of like bonded over and watched.
Yes, absolutely.
So we have the Synapse DVD right here, and then Unearthed Films actually just released a Blu-ray not too long ago.
Yeah, I don't know the exact release on this, but it's a very great transfer.
Yeah,
they did the second one also.
Yeah. Okay. You want to talk about those?
I haven't actually watched them yet. I know that the second one, I guess it's a little bit of a spoiler, but unless we explain the spoiler, you won't know it's a spoiler, but I know it's involving Hideki, but I don't know to what extent, and I know that's a different cast beyond that element, but it's also, they also did a transfer Blu-ray of it.
Okay,
Blu-ray transfer, I guess it's that.
So there's two sequels.
Right. One, the third one, the original creator came back for, but the second one, he did not.
Now here's the thing. It's one of those deals where it has nothing to do with this movie.
Oh,
not the second one has nothing to do with this one, and the third one has nothing to do with the previous two.
Weird.
Yeah, it's like that in name only thing, I guess, to sell it in the States.
A Deadly Spawn kind of thing, but like actually having the right people attached in some way. Like it's not like Ridley Scott was ever attached to Deadly Spawn.
I don't really know. Hmm. There's not. It's the information's scarce.
Part of this, and
somebody's gonna be in the comments like, "Oh, you fucking idiot! You didn't know that it came out and like this, whatever."
Yeah, no,
like
sure.
I don't know everything, dude.
I mean, to your point though, like unless you're really familiar with these actors, like if you're heavy into '80s horror or
Japanese
cinema,
specifically,
maybe you know some of these actors. But yeah, we're coming at this again. Saw it 10 or 15 years back, whenever that was, back in the early 2000s. And I can't remember all these people's names. Sorry. And then when you look it up on IMDb, they don't have pictures.
Yeah.
Wikipedia, half of them don't even like. It seems like they don't even exist. So it's like, I guess this. They say this is the actor playing the character. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I know a lot. I know a lot of shit.
No,
but
me
I'm not.
Too.
I'm not
me
the
too.
Authority on anything.
Same.
Right. You know what I mean. So I'm sure there's some other blogger or some kind of archivist or some kind of Japanese horror cinema fucking snob somewhere that knows all the shit. But I don't, frankly, need to. But
sure.
I mean, you know, if there's something interesting that you know about it that we don't, let us know for sure.
I mean,
and share the knowledge.
Exactly. Because we love the trivias and talking about the special effects. But when it's hard to find anything, there is actually a documentary that I didn't watch on this Blu-ray. I watched like the first minute of it and I didn't get beyond that. So maybe that goes into it more. Maybe that's something to check out.
See, you got the Blu-ray. I only had my my DVD copy, and there's no documentary on this. It's just the movie with the, you know, the Japanese language in the subtitles. And I think there's like trailers and shit. I think there's an audio commentary.
Yeah. I mean, it's called Trappings of the Dead, reflecting on a Japanese cult classic. So I don't know how much of a documentary is, if it's kind of like that Stepfather Blu-ray I talked about last year.
See, where I didn't get to see that
interviews
either.
And like, it might be something like that, like cool, but not like a ton of new information. I don't know. I might watch it between now and when this episode comes out.
I mean, I definitely want to check it out. I mean,
they got some cool stuff on this. I mean, I didn't really go deep into this, but they have like director commentaries and stuff on there, but I didn't dig through any of that.
Sure, and I definitely want to check that out myself. So there's two sequels,
right? Yeah, to get back.
So
to
Unearth
that, yeah.
put out Evil Dead Trap 2, Hideki.
Incredible art. I'm imagining the transfer is just as good as this one, but I can't confirm.
Now, I haven't seen either of the films, but if they're anything like this film in terms of the quality of the film, I'm sure they're a good time. They just don't really have anything to do with it. It's even called something completely different. The third one is literally in name only. Like you have the Hideki like attachment to the second to the sequel but it's more about the second movie is more like Malignant.
Right. Well, I don't know if we want to really go deep into Malignant right this second, because it might be relevant.
No, but I just want to put that into perspective for the listeners and
right, because we were, you know, behind the scenes BTS for Johnny Blue out there. Yeah. we were talking about that a little before the show. Yeah. It might be relevant sooner than later on this
There
episode.
Are parallels to this first one, but it's a completely different story in the second one. And I think, I think they tacked it on to make it.
No, like I can see that.
A spiritual successor. But the third one has nothing to do with either
That's
of them.
That's kind of interesting to
me. It's called Broken Love Killer. Yeah, it's kind of like the troll movies.
Yeah, well,
you have Jean-Carl Beekler's Troll classic, the classic 1986 classic, and then you have Troll 2 directed by Claudio Fragasso, I'm pretty sure. That movie has nothing to fucking do with that first movie. The Goblin, who are the goblins? Wow. You know, it's a whole thing. Good movie in its own right, or fun movie in its own right, but has nothing to do with the original.
Oh, yeah, I got you, yeah.
And then, of course, Crawlers and Quest for the Mighty Sword, which are 3 and 4, Troll 3 and 4. But anyway. Oh, just real quick, let me put the fucking needle back for Evil Dead Trap 2. It's directed by Izo Hashimoto, who directed Akira.
Oh, really?
Which I thought was pretty neat.
It's got to be at least decent then, right?
I've never seen it. I don't know, like animation to live action, let's see, I don't know. We'll see.
I mean, if they could translate some of the body horror from Akira into Evil Dead Trap 2, which would make sense based on this first film, sure. But you're right, it is a very different medium.
So you're right, Toshihiro comes back for Evil Dead Trap 3.
Right, he directs. I don't know if he writes or anything.
Like I said, it's called Broken Love Killer, but the direct translation of the original title, Chigureda I no Satsujin, The Brutal Love of Insanity.
Okay.
So it's probably a good movie, but it has nothing to do with these movies.
It's worth me looking into one day, but okay, fine.
So I want to talk a little bit about Toshihiro real quick, the director. He directs one episode of Chosujin Gurrensaiza, which is the Ultra Star God series, which is Toho and Konami's answer to Toei's Super Sentai and Kamen Rider.
Oh.
So they're like trying to compete with that
for the
tokusatsu stuff or the henshin stuff.
Sure, you know?
But he also directs some Pinky Violence stuff too, which I thought was pretty cool. And I was like, oh, that kind of lines up with a lot of shit in this movie that we'll talk about.
He also straight up, I think, as the way Wikipedia described it, is he worked on pink films, Japanese softcore porn films.
Basically, yeah.
Which there was only a couple that linked to anything. And I was like, okay, that's interesting career trajectory.
Well, yeah. And the Angel Guts films, we'll talk about those in a second.
I saw that too. Yeah.
But Pinky Violence, specifically like Girl Boss Mafia Lynch. And he did a Prisoner Scorpion. What was it? Prisoner Scorpion.
Like a Japanese spin on that?
No. Prisoner Scorpion.
Oh, yeah, duh.
Death Threat. The original, the 70s.
Right, we were talking
Prisoner
about that
Scorpion
on the Thriller
movies.
Episode.
Yeah, they're
fucking
awesome. So those are like, so those are Pinky Violence movies. And again, like you said, the Pinky films are softcore porns, but there's also a lot of violence in them.
Right.
And these ones specifically are like rape revenge type movies. Those specifically.
Right.
Like the... And
that
like the
mentioned, yeah.
Like Delinquent Girl Boss and like the other Prisoner Scorpion movies we were talking about.
Okay.
So I thought that was interesting and I thought that was kind of cool. And you can feel those vibes running through that. Like it's kind of dripping with that. Also, it feels like that because of the writer, Takashi Ishii, who wrote all of the Angel Guts movies.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
He wrote them all. And Toshiharu did one of those, I think.
Okay. Now, I'm only familiar with the name, but I'm guessing those are just hyper-violent or something to that effect.
They're like... they're softcore movies, like you said, but they deal with, like... Some of them have, like, dominate, like, BDSM kind of things, like Undercover Cop.
Oh, as, like, part of
Red Shoe Diary type things going on.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Also with extreme violence and stuff.
Sure,
like that,
yeah.
So the effects are done by Shinichi Wakasa, and he does a ton of the Godzilla suits from the Heisei and Millennium era.
My favorite eras.
Hey, look, I've
tried so hard to like the early stuff. I've really tried. I'm not trying to be a curmudgeon on Godzilla here. I love it, but those movies are so hard for me to return to.
Look, man, I totally get it. Like, I totally get the sentiment with that. And, like, if you don't have, for somebody who doesn't have, like, super built-in nostalgia for those,
I mean, I kind of do, but not as much as you, to be fair. Yeah. But, yeah.
Which is surprising, because your dad loves Godzilla.
I like it a lot. It's just, I don't know. Not to deviate into that, but
sure.
That's cool trivia that he worked on those.
Yeah. Well, he also did Ultraman, and he did Gamera 2 Attack of the Legion.
Cool.
Yeah.
Did he do Gamera, I'm assuming?
I don't know. He worked on the suits, the monster suits, so I'm assuming all of that
that's
stuff.
Cool.
Yeah. And the Rebirth of Mothra series he did too.
So he was in charge of that exploding Godzilla and that little baby Godzilla in Destroya, I suppose.
Yes, he absolutely.
Biolante, there you go.
Yeah, there you
Some
go.
Of the bangers.
Yes. And before we jump in, I want to talk about the music because I really love the music. We can talk a little bit more about the music as the episode goes on and how it applies to the film. But Tomohiko Kira does the score here, and he did the soundtrack for the second Bomberman 64 game, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah. You want to fucking give a quick plot crunch of this?
Sure.
Do it.
I mean, there's not really a ton to this film, and I don't mean to say that to undermine anything here, because there's a lot happening.
It's more visually striking than anything.
Yeah. Basically, the setup is some crazy motherfucker sends a torture tape.
A snuff film.
Yeah, to a TV station, to this woman, specifically Nami, who has a late night show, and is like, hey, here's how you get here. They don't actually say anything in the video. It's all visual. You see how they get there, and she sees the woman dead, and it's like, oh, we need to fucking go there and figure out what happened. She takes her team of fellow female news associates, and they bring their friend Kondo. I forget what his job is, but he goes with them as a bodyguard / driver.
They just con him into it.
Yeah. They talk him into it. I mean, there's other reasons why he may have gone, you find out. But anyway...
Well.
It's in this old factory, and surprise, they end up starting getting picked off by some mysterious person. Mm. And there may be some, I was going to say spiritual or supernatural elements to this, but it's kind of just in the air. It's not entirely clear till the end of the film. And you kind of follow these characters as they're butchered one by one. And then we kind of end up with our final girl. And you get the big twist reveal at the end, and the rest is kind of history
banger.
Without just saying it.
Yeah, it's a banger.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we have Late Night with Nami. She's shooting right next to Pete Venkman's show.
Yeah.
It comes on right after Bassmasters.
They have that guy standing off stage with that skinless chihuahua ready to hand it off.
The Sphinx cat?
Yeah.
Weird.
Yeah.
So, like you said, she gets this VHS. And the way that this is shot, by the way, it has this very artistic air about this whole movie. If I had to compare it to anything or make the comparison, it feels like Tsukamoto directed a giallo movie.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, that's why I wore the Suspiria shirt for the episode, because it really does feel like a Japanese giallo.
Toshiharu's influence is very Argento. You can feel it.
Oh,
like he's
all
trying
over,
hard,
man.
But like
the lighting is about the only thing he didn't steal from Argento. I mean, it's used throughout, but it's not like Argento, where it's every room, it's like blasting in the face, which I love. That's the only thing he didn't steal.
I think it might have went a little bit over the top if it was that, but the way that he uses light in this, or the cinematographer, and the feeling of it, has this very like 80s slasher mixed with like an Argento style giallo.
Argento slasher, the Dutch angles out the ass.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of great camera moves in this movie.
The music, like you said, I we're gonna know a little bit more, like you had said a little in the intro there, but the music, the theme is very good, but they play it incessantly in this film, and they definitely kind of set the audience up for when you know something's gonna happen, or at least to try to make you think something's happening, which is honestly a little hard to accomplish, so I got to give the movie props for this, but they'll add like an extra chord over the soundtrack, or it'll be like the next verse, and you're like, whoa, the tension's ratcheting up. The character doesn't know yet, but they played that second verse. You better watch out, Joe.
When that soft piano's on, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's like, it reminds me of like the guitar in like Deep Red.
Bird with the crystal plumage comes to mind.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, but then all of a sudden when like the full orchestration comes in, it sounds like that fucking 90s song, and all around the world, la 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 la.
I was gonna say a little like opera, but yeah, that does. You're right,
dude. It fucking sounds like it. Like you could like literally sync the fucking lyrics to that song, and it'll work.
That's the way theirs goes. Ours goes.
But yeah, she gets the tape. It's very disturbing. It's this woman being tortured. Who we don't ever totally find out who it is. It's implied it might be his mother, but I feel like that's just like him seeing women that look like the mother and victimizing them, I think is the implication, right?
My thing, yes. It's a real like Ted Bundy situation going on.
Right, because I guess we didn't even say this. The literal opening is this disembodied voice on a computer watching her show.
Yeah. And he's like in this room, and again, it feels very like Tsukamoto with like the lighting and everything.
And you have the two voice thing is introduced instantly, and you don't really know what it is yet.
No.
You think, okay, there's a little kid there?
Maybe.
There's a woman behind them at telling them dinner's ready, Hideki?
Yeah, because you hear the three different voices. And the way that culminates at the end is pretty great.
It's great. I just want to mention that because it's important to the setup. But you're right. Then 100%. She does get that tape and is like, holy shit, some woman just got butchered.
Oh my God. This
eyeball.
Dude,
shit?
This fucking tape. This is, Tony, this is one for the ages, bud. Okay? This might even be worse than, I think this is worse than Thriller. Cruel Picture, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to look up. Thriller, at least we could find some information about what that really was. It was a dead body or something.
Yes, but this is definitely a special effect. And they do not shy away. And again, the use of the angles on this is
and
fucking awesome because somebody is being abused POV style.
A big time.
And there's like a shot. This is all like on a grainy VHS tape, by the way, which makes it even more unsettling. There's like the guy stabs the woman and cuts her up, but the fucking eye, man, it you see the point, like the camera's riding the point of this thing.
It's so well shot.
And it goes like right in, no cutaways, just right into the fucking eye and all this shit fucking comes out.
And they do like one of these up the eye.
Dude, when they, you're like, oh my God, that's horrible. Yeah. And then it's like, it keeps going and it fucking slits her eyelid and then pulls out. And then that cut between the effect and the real life was done really well.
That's what I was going to say, because that's an amazing cut back and forth between Nami watching it and the zoom in on her and the zoom in on the actual eye getting pierced. The editing in this movie is a fucking masterclass, and I have, like, if I really wanted to nitpick it, I could, but it's just so well edited.
I think so.
To the music, to the what's happening on screen, it's kind of the tenement of every good horror movie on some level, where the editing, like, I feel like a lot of people don't talk about that, but it's like, if it's done well, you might not think about it, or if it's bad, you can't not think about it, but this is just, it's fucking really well done, and again, those camera angles, the music, it all comes together, like, perfectly.
And this is only the first 5 minutes of the fucking movie.
Already, right,
And it's just like, okay, you know what
we've
you're in
We've seen nothing
for.
Yet.
Yeah, and, well, we've seen a lot and nothing at the same time.
I mean, I guess that's true.
So Nami puts together
the female news team.
And it's Mako,
the photographer, right?
Ray.
Don't know what she does, but
she's the floozy of the group.
Apparently.
Rhea.
That's not confusing, but people have similar names.
She's the more conservative girl of the group.
She's the chicken shit.
Yeah.
The stereotypical, I need to get the fuck. She's, what's his face from Night of the Demons?
Raj.
Raj, yeah. She's like, as soon as something bad happens, it's a legitimately bad thing, but she's like, I'm out.
Dude, she gets it the worst, man. Like, real bad.
That's,
And then
Kondo is
and
the
then
other
Kondo,
guy.
Or Kondo?
It's spelled Kondo.
I think it's Kondo.
And then Nami, of course.
And then Nami is the main chick,
There's also a TV producer who's just, like, has literally one scene and then is never seen again.
I kind of love it, too, because she has, like, she has this late-night television show, which is akin to, like, you know, like, some Tony Pope shit. Like, hardcore, you know? It's like fuck, that episode of Tales from the Crypt that we talk about all the time, the TV one, where he goes to the haunted house and it's, like, an access show where, you know, where they kind of prey upon these weird stories,
sure,
right? And to get people to watch and all this shit.
yeah, this is a fucked up scene where a fucking bird gets eaten by an alligator, and it's like, well, oh, that was real.
Yeah, that totally was. But my point there was, like, this tape, she's, like, kind of freaked out, but not really, because she's like, yeah, we're totally going to go there where they sent this tape from.
Like the Night Stalker or something like that. Yeah, or some shit. Or Nightcrawler, I mean.
Because she wants to get the fucking scoop.
Yeah.
You know, she wants to do this on her show and talk about it. So, well, she gets more than she bargained for. So they fucking load up the truck.
Well, she even says, don't you want to meet the guy? And, like, I think Ray's like, I'm good.
No, I'm good. Yeah. That what Kondu's like, yeah, he probably wants to, like, smell your underwear and, like, wear rubber all over his greasy head or something.
I mean, hey, that's a thing. So, sure, he's not totally off the mark there.
Sort of.
It's Japan. Anyway, they
just go to the vending machine.
Well, exactly. That's what I'm saying. So they drive over in their fucking news van.
It's already creepy, dude. Like, even coming down this road, you know, it's just like this big, they roll up to this big abandoned military base.
Yeah, you find out it's a military base. First, you're not sure if it's a factory or what.
It's fucking Umbrella Lab, dude. Something's going on in there.
There's definitely some Hellraiser things happening inside the old Umbrella Lab. Might even be moving into Silent Hill territory by the end here. But yeah, it's Umbrella.
It's definitely an experiment. He's a fucking... Yeah. We'll see.
I think the High Evolutionary was fucking working in there at some point, honestly.
He was trying to make it better, man. Yeah, he's
making that lambskin guy. Lamb chop. You know what I'm talking about.
War pig.
Yeah. One of them. So before they get there, there's just a funny thing I want to mention that they kind of like focus on a little bit. They kind of do a little like, I guess character building is they have these hamburgers.
Oh my God, the fucking hamburgers.
It's just, you know, the camaraderie of the group they're trying to show. And like, they almost hit a dog. Mm-hmm. And they're like, he dropped the hamburgers. Oh, the hamburger. They keep going up with these I don't know. It's just kind of a funny aside.
Just eat the dirty hamburger off the floor.
Right. But they're so focused on the hamburgers, they miss... Weirdo guy standing off by the side. That
Albert Wesker standing against a tree in the shadow.
Right? Yeah. This guy who's obviously a bad from the get-go. Like, there's a scene later where they try to, like, make the character think, oh, I just happen to be here. Don't worry about it. But if you're watching this movie, you're like, all right, this guy's bad news with the dark shades on and the trench coat
They do this weird thing where there's, like, a shadow in broad daylight. And this guy's standing in it. It's pretty neat.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It doesn't take long for them to meet him, but no. Before they do, they kind of split off into three groups. We have Mako and Rhea go together, and Kondo and Ray go together, and Nami's like, I'm just going to go by myself.
Yeah. We spend a lot of time with Ray and Kondo first, because like...
because apparently they're actually like seeing each other,
yeah, they're
kinda.
Seeing each other, and he's like, come on, I want to fuck, and she's like, nah. She's like, no, you couldn't even get it up last night, and he's like, oh, I'm sorry, it was the bourbon, and she's like, you're just impudent. Like, the fuck away from me. So there's some really good, like, spooky set pieces here. But it eventually it culminates into Kondo like fucking Ray.
He's giving her the sequel from last night.
He's making up for it.
That's what he says. He comes out of this fucking cupboard like a boggart or something trying to scare her.
She punches him and he falls down, like breaks his glasses.
Meanwhile, while this is all going on, occasionally it's happened once or twice at this point. Mm. This is where I think there is some Evil Dead influence. Oh. Maybe that's why they're like, fuck, I call it Evil Dead Trap.
Yeah.
You get this POV.
It's a black and white POV shot, just like the evil coming out of the woods with some fucking Tsukamoto stank
and
on
it's
it,
even
dude.
Got a little roar to it, kind of like Evil Dead, and it's
roar
cool.
Nosh.
So that pops up, it pops up occasionally, and at one point while they're fucking, it stops, and almost, again, like Evil Dead or Night of the Demons, I'm a little disappointed we never really do anything with that by the end. I feel like there's an idea there that gets kind of lost in the shuffle.
Let's talk about it when we get there, because I'm going to give away the goat if we talk about it now.
Sure, okay, fair enough. So while that's all going on, Nami's like kind of just walking around trying to find anything, and she stumbles across like this dead bird and gets freaked out by that because it's like all these bugs are eating it.
Oh, it's like these spider crickets or something.
It's fucking gross. Yeah. And then she just kind of hears a sound behind her. I forget what it even is, like, you know, a foot against gravel or a cigarette being lit, and she turns around and
it's that lighter, dude.
Oh, the very hot lighter.
The very hot lighter.
Which I wasn't thinking about, but yeah, that thing would be molten. Yeah, he's got the lighter. And again, we don't ever, I feel like, get his name. The only name we could find on IMDb that might have been him was Dice K, but I feel like it's maybe said literally once in passing.
If that's it, it might be that one time right there. And I missed it too. And because they never say it again.
And most of the movies just says, you, they, or he.
My brother.
Yeah. So instantly you think there's something weird with this guy, whether he's behind it or not, you don't know, but the thought's in the back of your head.
Well,
he's definitely not part of the news team is the point.
No, he's also there with good intentions, ? Because he's like, you need to get out of here.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
But then he's also like, I'm looking for somebody. He doesn't tell you yet. You do find out it's his brother eventually.
Yeah.
But you don't know what that means or whatever. So she's like, okay, well, I'm not going to overthink this, even though we literally broke in here to get here and you're here randomly, but okay.
Real quick, Rei is Hitomi Kobayashi.
Okay.
And she was an adult film star for...
So she didn't mind this scene.
For Japan Home Video, who funded this movie, but they're like, they had an adult version of the studio called Alice Japan. So I guess that's how they got her to take her clothes off.
I mean, she's fucking this guy. I'm assuming there's a sock involved, but they're right on top of each other. I'm borderline seeing, like, vagina in some of these shots.
He's, like, flipping her over and fucking her six ways to Sunday. And, like...
I mean, okay, sure.
And I'm sure fucking...
The guy didn't shoot that softcore / hardcore porn.
Exactly. Angel Guts guy's like, yeah, and then he turns her over and then he fucks her and then he fucks her again and then she rides him. And it's, like, a whole thing. It's, like, this long drawn out... There's a lot of, like... gross sex in this movie.
Yeah, it does serve a purpose. It does go on a little too long, but there is a point to it. And then, like I said, Mako is taking the pictures, and Rhea gets kind of freaked out and is like, well, if you want to take pictures, I'm fucking leaving. Have at it.
Yeah, she walks outside, and there's this awesome shot of her walking through the woods.
Yeah.
And
that felt Evil Dead-y,
too,
man. Oh,
my fucking God, dude. She's like walking through the woods, and the camera's like, simultaneously rotating around her and pushing in and out at the same time.
And
it's really cool.
They do the thing with the wind kind of hitting her. And that's the last time I really felt like it had any kind of Evil Dead reference, in my opinion.
But really personifying the dread and the anxiety and how she's scared.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, through the lens of the camera was
absolutely
pretty,
I'm just
pretty
saying,
brilliant.
There's also that peppering of, oh, maybe there's something else to this, I guess.
Oh, sure.
Because the wind's, like, blowing around her weird and whistling. And
yeah. Well, there might be something
again,
weird.
Yeah. But, yeah, so then I forget the exact series of events.
Before that happens.
Okay.
Rhea, like, walks off, and right before she gets to this one building, we get introduced to the foot of the killer, and this fucking guy, the gimp, comes out of the fucking thing, and he's got, like, a ping pong ball in his mouth, and he's gagged up.
Right.
And he kicks him back in his fucking hole.
Yeah, we need that first, you're right.
Yeah. You have to set that up because it won't make sense.
You're
later.
Right, yeah. We got to get introduced to the fucking Prowler because this guy's just like the goddamn Prowler.
Dude, it's Ben Willis and Rosemary's Killer smashed together.
Yeah. I'm okay with it.
He looks great. I think he's scary.
He's scary. The guy chained up was again another wrinkle to this film I totally forgot about.
Yeah.
But he's fucking disgusting.
Yeah, and it's so...
A lot of implied things going on with whatever's happening to him, too.
It's periphery, but I'm almost positive that that's the...
other person's husband or friend
Boyfriend or whatever who on the tape was killed.
Right. To get them there.
Yeah.
You're right, though. That does happen because then we cut to Rei, now got her clothes back on, trying to take a shower.
She's trying to wash her clothes.
Rusty motherfucking abandoned building. Like, I ain't gonna happen.
No.
Well, she doesn't want everyone else to know they fucked. I get it.
Yeah, well, there's no getting around that now.
But what are you gonna walk around with wet clothes? Yeah, I fell in a puddle or something. What's that white shit on your leg? Kumdar's over there. He's bursting out of the ground. The stuff. I don't overthink it. But yeah, no, I guess you're right. Yeah, she's trying to wash her clothes, and then you know that was her mistake because Kano's like, you know, I fucked you, and I'm just bailing on you, I guess.
Well, sure. And then like, I like this scene because it's pretty tense because a maggot falls in her hair because Bones Bones is having a fucking party upstairs, man. Maggot on the pizza. Maggot on Rei.
In multiple locations, of course.
She walks into a snake.
That's creepy.
And I thought that was well done too, because she's standing there like super still for like this, I don't know what it is. I guess it's a poisonous snake.
Yeah. That was actually before Kondo scares her. Yeah.
I just wanted to put that in there because that's a pretty tense scene, and she's like crying. Really good.
It's an additional thing that the movie didn't need to do. They get him like, oh, the guy scares her. It's like, no, what about a snake? They're in this abandoned building. It's intense.
Well, right, but it also could happen too. This part not
could
so
not
much.
No.
This
in
could not
years.
Happen in a million years.
I mean, the first part sure, but the rest no.
Oh, it is so fucking good, man.
This is the one part of the movie I remembered. It was burned into my brain. The rest, it came back to me as I was watching.
When you say Evil Dead Trap, this is the scene I think of.
Yes, I mean, granted, it's not the one on the cover, no. Which is also very memorable. But yeah, it's the one you think of because she opens this cupboard that's like rattling. You know, she thinks it's Kondo again.
Yeah, fucking with her.
It's the dead woman from the tape. Scares the fucking shit out of her.
She falls right out into the front, and you're like, and it's a jump scare. And before you even get to recover from
Dude,
the jump scare,
it's less than a second.
It's like this fucking pike comes out of the ground and stabs her through the stomach. It is so fucking cool, man. And like, they just keep coming. One comes out of the wall and gets her in the arm, and then the other one comes in, hits her in the chest. It's awesome.
It's brutal.
It's so good.
And then they just cut away. Yep. She's dead.
Oh, something that I really love that this film does that I feel like a lot of films don't do anymore is like after all the carnage, because usually it's like quick, cut to the next thing. It's quick, and then it stops, and then it pulls out to let you take in everything that just happened, and then it cuts.
Yeah.
I love it.
I mean, you're right. And now nobody knows she's dead, and it makes sense. It doesn't feel like it's shoehorned in or forced because Kondo went back to the van. They're all going back to the van because that was the original plan. They're going to go back there after an hour.
It's also a giant complex.
Yeah.
And they're just like, I don't know. I guess Ray's off doing something. We'll just leave her a note.
Yep. Because Mako found something and she's like, come with me. So they go to this like gymnasium or theater or something. It's like the school.
It's like the entrance part.
Well, yeah, I guess that's specifically what she wants to show them, but they do go inside.
Yeah, and this is the first of some really cool shots with, like, the flash of the camera, because they use the flash of the camera to, like, light up this room, and in the room are all of these televisions, and all the windows are boarded up.
Yes, which comes back later.
So they find this room, and they're flashing the camera off, and they go inside, and they see somebody, like, run behind the TVs, and it freaks them the fuck out. So they run out of the room, and they're going deeper into the building, and they see somebody at the end of the hall, and they're like, who is that? And you just hear, and somebody's like floating across the floor. And
it's
like
a squeaky wheel.
And you're like, what the fuck is that? Ray has this huge hook through her on a chain, and she's like coming at them doing like 90 miles an hour and like knocks everybody down and fucking smacks against this cement wall.
Yeah. You know, secret's out now.
Oh, yeah.
People are dead. People are dying.
People are dying. But what's crazy is like stuff starts caving in.
Oh, yeah.
Like Rhea tries to like run out, and like shit starts falling down, and this whole walkway gets like a bunch of rubble.
Yeah, like almost down. like an explosion that just drops fucking cement everywhere.
They get separated, and Rhea like runs out a fucking side door.
She's like, I gotta get help. I gotta get the cops.
Yeah. And then it's Mako, Nami, and
Kondo,
and they like go up to this like door that's like this jail cell door.
Again, it really felt like Resident Evil by this point, just because it's a military base, and I know like a lot of those games like have that in like the tail end of them, and I'm like, I can't help but think of it.
But especially this shot. So it's,
I mean, granted, they came way later, so technically they maybe stole from this, but it's like hard not, you know, the timeline in my, the MDU, if you will, in my brain.
It's not way later. There's a movie that comes out a year after this, which we will be talking about later this year when we'll just put a pin in that.
Okay.
So she's standing in front of this, you know, cell, and it's pitch dark. And Mako like leans over to like look through the gates to see if she could see anything. And this fucking knife comes out and like cuts her cheek and pulls back. And she's just like, what? And she sits up and you're like, wait a second, did she just get cut in the face?
Yeah.
And she's got this slice on her face and she's like, oh shit. They turn around and then fucking the Prowler's there.
Yeah, well, right.
Behind the gate. And then they all take off running.
They book it. And you know, it's dark as hell in here. I mean, So they kind of turn a corner, they see where there is a stairwell, and Nami and Kondo, they kind of just go for it, and they don't realize that the stairwell's been removed.
Oh, they go right down the fucking chute, man.
Yeah, like far enough that we don't know where the fuck they are, and then, you know, Mako's by herself and is like, oh shit, she notices the hole.
Yeah. So she's like, she's screaming down to them, but she has to run because the killer's after
her. Well, she keeps hearing the clicking in the behind her and the flash behind her.
Because she dropped her fucking camera.
It's probably the most intense part of the whole movie, I would say.
Because she's screaming for them and you hear ching, ching, ching. And you look in the hallway and the flashes are going off.
But you don't know how far away they are. No. That's the scary part.
But then there's this awesome scene where it's all dark. And the killer's coming after, and and he's hitting the flash. And as the flash is going up, it's very much like that scene in Alligator.
Oh, yeah.
Where that dude gets eaten when he's taking the pictures.
True.
It's really, I love that shit.
Mm-hmm.
But she ends up getting away and slams this door shut and puts like this big thing in front of it.
That did nothing.
And we're going to go outside and join Rhea, but let's take a little break first.
Find out why that didn't work shortly.
And now, these messages.
Hey, Sean, what you got there?
Oh, Cavity Color's the new Killer Clowns collection, obviously, Joe. 35th anniversary.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you just head to cavitycolors.com/moviedumpsterpodcast and use code moviedumpsterpodcast to get yourself 10% off.
That sounds great, but I think I'll just take yours.
Hello?
Hey, so earlier in the episode, we talked about us doing something a little new. So we finally got our own movie dumpster hotline number.
MD hotline.
The MD hotline, baby.
Long time coming.
Yes. So we can take, we're going to be taking a voicemail and we're going to be taking an email or snail mail or both for this middle segment of the show. And I guess let's do it. Here we go.
The first one.
Joe, my man, big time appreciation. I just received my hot sauces. Could not be happier. I can't wait to dig in and try them all later on. Huge fan of you guys, as you know. All the support in the world. Keep doing what you guys do. I love it all. Tremendous. MDU forever.
MDU forever indeed.
MDU forever indeed. That was from Adam Q. I'm glad you enjoyed the hot sauces.
Explain these hot sauces a little. I've imbibed in them before.
Everybody's been hitting us up. First, I just want to say thank you, Adam, because that was really sweet. And thanks for watching the show. Thanks for supporting the show. So the hot sauces, that's just something me and my wife do every year. We have a garden. We grow a bunch of shit. It's way too much for the two of us. So we make hot sauces and we sell
themed sauces.
Themed sauces, yeah. We did Herbert West Reagent, which is jalapeno.
Okay.
We did Cropsey's Campfire Sauce, which is like fire roasted peppers and stuff. There's a Death Kappa one, which is really fucking hot. Which
I remember that one.
Yeah. And there's a Freddy Barbecue Sauce, and there's Death Walks on High Heels. But I think most of them are sold out, especially by the time this airs, everything's gone. So it was like a special little thing we do. It's not like on the MD store or anything like that. Yeah.
And you've been doing this like on the DL, like, you know, to friends and family for a few years now. This is the first time you kind of open it up to other people.
Yeah.
So how, just out of morbid curiosity, how did that feel? Just, you know, I'm curious.
Well, we wanted to go beyond, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah.
The spectrum.
You want to go unbound, obviously.
Yes, you go full Frankenstein unbound, you never go back, baby. it was cool. We opened it up and we had some people like Adam chimed in, some fans chimed in and got some sauces. I know Pat Farmer has some sauces.
Okay.
Which he may or may not be doing a video on the hot sauces itself, like trying them.
Okay. So on Kings of Horror, I'm assuming?
On Kings of Horror, okay. So stay tuned or go subscribe to Kings of Horror, by the way.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty cool. We also have some snail mail.
Yes.
Or an email, snail mail. Do you want to open this one?
It was a digital mail that got printed into a snail mail.
Yeah, and then they sent it to us. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Do you want to do this one?
Sure.
Okay, here you go. Open it up. Who's it from?
To Movie Dumpster from Steven.
Steven.
Steven really sealed this son of a bitch.
He sure did.
Thanks, Steven. Also, this is how I open letters. So you're getting the full effect here.
Wow, you don't open it? Okay.
No, I don't.
Oh, this is fun. This is fun watching.
Okay.
What do we got cooking?
Steven sent us an email, snail mail. He sent us this. He says, hello. Hello, Steven. He says, I am writing to tell you I am enjoying your channel's look at Tales from the Dark Side. Well, thank you very much. We'll let Chris know.
Yeah, well, if Chris is watching this.
That's true.
Thank you
very much. Wave to him. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris.
You two, Adam and, fuck, I forgot his name. Steven! So Steven continues. He says, I recently found this channel on Comet TV and wanted to find a channel that was reviewing the episodes. Yours is the best so far.
Wow, thank you.
I really like what you're doing. And they said, I just wanted to share a few questions / observations, if that's okay, and if you have the time.
Of course.
Yes.
We're making time, baby.
We are. First, when you showed the answering machine, the pause was for effect because it's right here.
Oh, okay. Well, this is a different one.
Oh, goddamn it.
This is the MD hotline one.
Okay, I'm sorry.
The other one, that's in my office.
All right.
With Harry Anderson.
Right, well, right, okay,
it's the execusect.
Right, that makes more sense as I continue the question. Yep. First, when you showed the answering machine from All a Clone,
All a Clone by the
Telephone yeah. episode, what was the actual one used on the show? Or was it the actual one on the show? Or did you just mean that it's the exact model
okay.
that you were able to purchase? And they want to also add a morbid curiosity, how much did it cost?
Okay.
What a great find.
So, yes, that is the model that was used. It's not the prop from the show, but it's the Execusect TDC-30 or TCD-30.
You know that? I have no clue.
Because I searched endlessly for it for months and then finally fucking found one.
Yeah, I guess that would do it.
I think it was, I think I paid like $100 for it.
That's not bad.
It's not bad, but it's also kind of absurd for a fucking answering machine.
They knew, like, this guy really wants
They're
this
like,
fucking thing.
I know that some Tales from the Dark Side nut's gonna want this fucking thing. Anyway, so that's where I got it. This is not that answering machine. This is a different one we got. We actually used this one for the Dumpster Goblin. This is on loan.
Trick or Trash.
Yeah, this is on loan from Dumpster Goblin.
Yeah, he sent it to you. You got a La Paz postcard in the process with it.
He stole it from us, is what it is, so we took it back.
Okay. Daniel Baldwin's somewhere in the mix there.
You know he is.
All right, Steven has a little bit more here.
Okay, what does he got?
They also say, I was also wondering if you knew that there was a book of short stories from the series called Tales from the Dark Side, Volume 1.
Yes, we have it.
Oh, you do?
It's right here.
Oh, I think you've actually had that on set a couple times.
Yeah. So the plan for this, real quick, is for Patreon. We have not done it yet, but we want to read some of the stories out of this to coincide with the episodes that we've done. So look for that soon-ish question mark.
They go on to say they own the book also.
Oh, good for them.
They purchased it around the time the series first aired, so that's kind of cool.
Holy shit, that's awesome.
The first one's syndication in Salem, Massachusetts at a bookstore.
That's awesome.
And they also actually, pose kind of an idea or a question to us, and they say, I would assume it would be possible to interview some of the people behind the show. Would you ever consider doing that? And they just, before you want to answer that, I would say, sure. That's something that is on the table.
Yeah. Something we'll look into for sure.
Yes. They then say, I think you guys are good at what you do and would be able to ask some interesting questions, extract fascinating conversations from some of the principals.
Thank you. That's even bigger of a compliment.
Yeah. I was going to go more into that, but I guess we kind of answered that.
Yeah.
Just going to finish this up here. He's got a few more little comments here. He goes, I know I will have to view more of your episodes to see what you think, but I just wanted to say for me, the original pilot Trick or Treat is their absolute favorite.
It's a good one.
I mean, we're going down the line. That is the literal first one. That's an audio one, so check that out. And there's a little bit more here. They say your reviews bring back a lot of memories, which we talk about that often.
I mean, that's great. That's the whole point of the show, really.
As does the Comet TV re-airings. For some reason, I have not purchased the DVD of the series. I mean, we don't get paid for you to buy it, but we recommend it.
Yes. It's a lot easier to watch along, and it's at your leisure.
Yes. But they do own the other one that came out after Dark Side. They have Monsters when the show was first airing. They say they called Laurel and received a submission guidelines package because I wrote a teleplay called Call Waiting.
Holy shit. That's amazing. Wrote a teleplay and like was going to submit it to Laurel for Monsters, the TV
show?
That's incredible.
They wanted to submit it for consideration. It had a copy of the first page of the teleplay for the Fevermen.
That's the first episode of Monsters.
Oh, I think I saw that one, actually.
Yeah, it's really good.
When I borrowed your DVD set and watched one fucking episode.
Which was the first episode.
Gave it back six months later. Which I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something. I wish there would be consideration of perhaps reviving the series, but not in a modern way. I think he's talking about Monsters specifically, but Tales also, I'm sure, falls in there.
Yeah.
And as the CW wanted to do with Joe Hill. Oh, I didn't know that.
That would be awesome. I mean, we talk about doing our own version of Tales and Monsters all the time, and I think that would be super fun to do.
Joe Hill is an interesting choice. I didn't know that. That was on the table at one point.
Well, I think Joe Hill continued the Tales from the Dark Side in the comics, and then I guess he was behind. I think we might have talked about
it. We probably talked about that on like the Creepshow episode or one of the Tales episodes.
Either the first episode of Talks or the Creepshow episode.
Yeah. They also then say that instead... do it in the exact same original manner as the original, micro budget on film stock, same pacing style, etc. Might be an interesting experiment, and I'm sure it would be monetized in some fashion.
That would be incredible.
And Steven kind of closes it out here saying, anyway, take care. Hope this letter reaches you. And they don't have a YouTube account, hence they wrote the email.
Well, you're not going to see it on YouTube, and we'll be emailing you after the fact.
Yes, yes.
But we really appreciate it, Steven, and we're glad you're enjoying the show. And you're having a good time.
And people that do have the YouTube account, now here's an outlet.
You might
be commenting now, but send us an email, shoot us a voicemail to the number that will be appearing on screen as I'm saying this, and Joe's going to probably say it as I'm pantomiming towards you.
You are absolutely right. It's that number, that MDU hotline number where you can leave a voicemail is 740-688-DUMP. Oh, wait a second. People don't have letters on their numbers anymore. You know.
Look at the graphic on screen. Check the description.
Yeah, and if you're listening on your audio podcast, it's 740-688-3867.
Yes.
So give us a call.
Or shoot us an email or mail us on the P.O. Box. Again, that one we actually don't have immediate access. It's on screen. It's in the description. It's a P.O. Box.
Movie Dumpster, P.O. Box 918, Bangor, PA 18013.
Well, that's why we have Joe here.
Yes.
And with that said, on with the show.
So yeah, welcome back. Here we are. We left Mako by herself outside of this locked door. Now, this fucking scene is so cool.
Yeah.
I love it because it's one shot.
Yeah.
And Mako's like barricaded this door, and the camera's going from the door handle down to Mako, the hallway, back to Mako, back to the door handle, back to this. And then it finally, like, after you're stressed out because you're like, okay, what's going to happen? Then the fucking door handle pulls down and the fucking door explodes out.
Yeah, that was... She tried and it did nothing. This guy is like a fucking Hulk or something.
Yeah,
I don't know.
But like, she wasn't expecting that. And like, you know, the audience isn't either. It's awesome.
Well, and the way he gets her, he doesn't actually kill her here, but he knocks her out because she's like screaming and he pulls the knife out and she grabs it for whatever reason. It's not totally clear. But the point is, he pulls the knife out of her enclosed hand, leaves this huge cut mark on it, and just, I guess, between the pain and the sight of it, just everything happening, she fucking just screams and faints.
Because through the whole thing, the camera's going off.
Well, that too, yeah.
And she grabbed something, and it, like, zooms in on her hand with the knife, and then he just pulls it out. It's a fucking great scene. The way that it's put together and everything.
You're 100% right. And then, yeah, we do go outside now to Rhea, who's made it to the van. It's starting to get kind of dark out. It's dusk-esque.
Poor Rhea. She opens the fucking gate. She's got the keys to the van. She starts that shit up.
I would have blown that fucking gate off its hinges with that van. I am sorry. Someone was murdered.
Yeah.
In a very theatrical way. I'm just getting the fuck out. I mean, I guess she didn't know what was about to happen because as soon as she gets back in the van, little gag ball boy.
Oh, the gimp comes out full fucking circle, man.
I don't know if he was hanging out back there or he snuck in while she opened the gate, but regardless, he
pulled a Leatherface. Or a Chucky.
Maybe Leatherface Texas Chainsaw 3D or whatever the fuck it was called. Because all of a sudden now this character, even though I guess it makes even less sense with Leatherface, decides, well, I'm being told to kill you so I can gain my freedom, but I'm going to rape you now.
Oh, yeah. Well, he goes... Well, the thing about that is, like, he's like, oh, I've been told to kill you. You can't leave because you know too much. And he goes to choke her, and then it cuts. When we cut back, he's fucking... Rhea.
Well, he does specifically say before that, and
I like to do it slow.
Well, he goes, slower. I want to enjoy this, or something slower. To that effect.
Slower.
Yeah, he's a piece of shit.
Yeah, he's a real scumbag.
And yeah, you're right. I guess let's just talk about that, because there is a little back and forth here, but I feel like it's just better to get this scene done and over with.
Yeah, this is where that Angel Guts shit comes in, or that Pinky Violence shit comes in, because now we have like this extended rape scene where he's like plot dumping?
Yeah, that kind of is happening. You're right, yeah.
Because he's fucking her, and he's like, yeah, there's two of them, but there's one of them, but there's two of them. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, because Rhea, to her credit,
the killers
in this horrible, horrible situation is at least like trying to like think about, okay, well, this is happening to me, yeah, but can I get some information? Can I just do something to make this not just a total like horrible experience? And so, yeah, you're right. She does get that information out of him, but it doesn't fucking matter because as soon as she kind of gets away from him, He, you know, she opens the door to get away. He just overpowers her anyway.
He overpowers her, but then this rogue fucking bow gun bolt comes right through the fucking window and like out of his mouth.
Talk about the camera work in this again, just briefly. Oh. It's this shot from like the back of the van, and it's this long, you know, minute or two scene of her fighting him off and him, you know, blowing his load up her ass or something. You could just see in the background, if you're really paying attention, the gate close.
Oh, yeah, that's creepy. And then because there's nobody there.
Yeah. So you just are like, uh-oh. And then you're right. Then he gets it in the back of the head with the fucking crossbow.
Yeah. And it goes through his mouth and he's like bleeding into all over her mouth.
It's gross.
She's able to climb out. But this woman, again, like this fucking kill is like it's amazing.
It's really well done.
This fucking wire garrote noose comes out of the sky and like
he like flings it over like a fishing
like wraps around her neck, and the way that it's shot, she's like being pulled up on the side of the van and she's like kicking and stuff. She's pulled over the top,
fucking underwear's getting ripped off in the process,
and then when she comes off the other side of the van, she just lands on her neck and it just breaks in half.
Feel really bad for the character. I don't want to like talk about this too long, but I know in the past this is something that may have killed a movie for me. It doesn't for this one. I don't know if maybe I've turned a corner or it just was like, well, that was the point.
It's meant to be uncomfortable. Yeah. And it's meant to be gross and it's meant to shock you and it's meant to scare you.
It definitely is overkill. Could have maybe chopped 30 seconds off of that, but I understand that's the point.
It did and its job.
It did. It's not Drainiac, where I feel like
it made
I just
your skin crawl.
Yeah, it made my skin crawl, but not unlike Drainiac, I didn't need to then go take a shower after. I was just like, whoa, that was brutal. Let's move on.
But there's also this...
There's a way to do it. I guess if every movie just excised it, I'd be okay with that too. But here's a way where it's like, all right, it worked.
I feel like scumbags need
That's
to be
what I'm
scumbags.
Saying. That's what I'm
saying. There needs to be a means to an end, and sometimes mean shit just happens.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Unfortunately. But...
I mean, he gets killed too.
Rhea's on a whole nother level because all that happens and then she gets noosed and fucking neck broken. Yeah, it's a whole thing.
It's a horror movie at the end of the day. And again, like we said, this guy directed stuff like this. It fits.
So there's this weird scene from there where Nami like wakes up on a roof. There's like water next to her, but then she's on a roof.
This is a scene that does a lot of storytelling with off-screen elements because she's on the roof, which just as an aside, because this is weird shit I think about, is her fucking jacket being this huge puddle and she just decides, well, it was expensive. I'm taking it.
Yeah.
And but you're right. She's on this roof and she's like walking around. She's like, what the hell? Why am I up here? And she bumps into
Sunglasses
boy. Yeah. And he's like, again, another observation that just I am focused on because I'm insane.
Okay.
He's wearing flip-flops and he's walking through every motherfucking puddle. I'm like, those things have to be soaked. But anyway.
This line delivery, this exposition right here is amazing.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, how many died before you? And she's like, what do you mean? He's like, well, how about when did he die? And the camera pans over and it's fucking Khandu's head just like on the ground and she freaks out.
That's what I'm talking about, though. It's smart.
It's so good. And he's like,
yeah.
It lights up a cigarette.
With that lighter.
Yeah. And like, I'm looking, this is where we get
the brother dump a little bit.
I'm looking for my brother.
He does fuck up here. I mean, they do walk around a bit, so I may have the timeline slightly messed up in my head here because they walk around the complex. But he's like, he's talking about it at one point, and like on a rewatch, I notice it, but on the first viewing, I don't really pick up on it because I don't know. And I guess it would be anybody else watching it for the first time. But he's explaining this to her at one point. And he's like, yeah, my brother. And then, like, something happens off screen or something. They hear a noise. And he goes, yeah, Hideki.
Yeah.
You got to stop doing that.
Yeah.
But she takes that as he's saying Hideki. His name's, my brother's Hideki.
Yeah, right.
It'll make sense shortly. But he sees Hideki, supposedly, or whoever this is. He's claiming it's his brother Hideki.
There is, it's almost like he's, you don't know yet, but it's kind of like a ghost. Like, is he a ghost? Is he
again,
there
there's...
to like protect her or something because of the way of the way he shows up, the way he talks and the things he alludes to, and especially the thing with the lighter.
Right.
that we'll get to in a second.
And some of those supernatural elements, like we were talking about, like the Evil Dead-esque kind of things.
Yeah, but they haven't like gone together yet entirely.
So in this scene, he sees the brother. Nami and the audience don't see it, but you're led to believe that he's been stabbed by him.
Yeah, he has an arrow in the arm.
Yes, and he pulls out this fucking revolver and he's just firing off at him. He's like, "You son of a bitch!"
And he's just shooting into the darkness. And she's like, "Who are you shooting at? Like, you can't even see him."
Exactly. And again, the camera work, man, and the editing just really just sell this whole concept.
And he just runs off.
Yeah.
And then Nami's walking around by herself and finds this fucking TV in the middle of the floor.
Yeah.
And it's a close-up shot of Mako, and she has...
Makeup on,
and you're like, what the fuck?
It's like corpse makeup.
And she's just like, help, help me, help me. And she's running around. It shuts off, and she ends up running around the complex.
Well, she ends up back in that room with all the TVs and the wooded-off windows. That's a really cool scene.
It's awesome. And then you see her, like, all over the screens, and then...
And then the music beat goes up, and you're like, oh!
Around the world, and la, 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 la. Yeah.
That's the way theirs goes. Ours goes...
Exactly. So then she finally finds out where Mako is. But again, I don't want to keep mentioning the editing, but I feel like I have to because it's just so good. We get to see what Mako actually, almost like kind of like Saw did this a lot, actually.
Again, we get some John Kramer shit going on right now.
But even just in the editing, because they show the audience what is actually happening before the character knows, and that's your tension.
And it's so good, man.
Because she's fucking like strung up on this thing with this like... This pulley that's attached to the trigger of a crossbow that's attached, and the wire goes to the doorknob.
This scene has to be at least 30 seconds.
Oh, yeah.
She grabs this door handle, and then it holds on the door handle, and you see, like, this fucking Kevin McAllister ass fucking wire hooked up. And the camera pans all the way around the whole fucking room, and you're just like, oh my god, what is this? Like, again, the tension's through the... You're on the edge of your fucking seat, like, what
literal
is this hooked
tension
up to? And then it stops, and it's on the trigger of the fucking crossbow, and then we pull out, and Mako's, like, chained to the wall with a fucking ball gag in her mouth.
And then, so, you know, she opens the door.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, fuck.
You go, oh, fuck, this thing fires. And Mako,
the camera,
like,
follows it, too.
Yeah, it follows it. And, like, Mako dodges it, and it hits the wall.
Well, you know why? Because when it fired, it went, McClunky.
McClunky.
So...
McClunky.
The banger of this scene, you're like, oh, my God, thank God. Mako didn't get shot in the head. Nami walks over and trips some other fucking switch, and
the literal tripwire.
Giant machete comes down and fucking smashes into the side of Mako's fucking head and splits it in half.
Like a log being chopped.
It's amazing.
And like, there's that moment where the brain's like still kind of active.
And she's like,
she's like, oh my god, Mako, Mako!
So the killer shows up, so Prowler shows up, and then, like, fireworks start, like, shooting off, like, these
he's, like, firing them, I thought.
Like, Roman candles are fired. Yeah. Well, we'll get to that a little bit later, but...
But I think in this instance, I thought he was actually using fireworks.
I don't think so.
I guess now that you mention it, maybe you're right.
They're just, like, these weird things going, these balls of fire or sparks flying at her, so she runs out.
This is a hard one not to just spoil flat out. I know this is movie dumpster, but...
So she's, like, defeated, and the bolts come flying at her again.
Yeah.
And it, like, pins her to a fucking wall.
Kind of Looney Tunes-y.
It's cool. She rips herself off the wall, and then she's like, fuck you, I'm not scared of you, or whatever. And then this fucking rogue bolt comes and lands right in her leg.
Right in the leg. But that's... The glasses guy conveniently shows up and is like, oh, yeah, I was taking a leak or something. You need help?
And he comes with his gun, and he takes a shot in the dark, and you're like... And he's like, oh... And you're like, is it sunglasses? Is it not sunglasses?
At this point, I'm like, does that gun actually have any fucking ammo? Is that all blanks at this point? You're really just... haphazardly shooting this thing.
He goes over and he helps Nami, pulls the thing out of her leg.
He knows where the secret entrance is, apparently.
This is where...
Or exit, I guess.
this is where they do the lighter thing.
Yeah.
And he's like, here, hold this for a second. And she grabs it, and it's so fucking hot, she drops it.
Anybody that's held a lighter for a long period of time, mostly smokers, let's say, of a particular, you know, marijuana.
Yeah. Well, I used to smoke cigarettes.
But I'm saying, like, you're not just sitting there holding it. Like, even a Zippo, you're not just sitting there with a lit the entire time.
Well,
you know,
yeah,
you're lighting your thing and you're putting it away so it cools off.
Yeah.
You know, my point is, you're holding it a little longer on some of those medicinal items, let's say.
Well, yes,
so
I understand.
My point is, if you've fucked with a lighter where you're doing that a lot, it gets hot after a few minutes.
Sure does.
he's holding it for like 15, 20 minutes. I mean, it's an implied 15, 20.
Yeah.
But it's like, yeah, like when you sit there and think about it, it's like, holy shit, does this guy just not feel pain? Is he a ghost? What the hell's happening?
Well, that's the thing. Is he a ghost or whatever? Instantly. Yeah, no, I mean, he's burning up all that fucking Zippo fluid too. What's the fucking burn thing on there?
Yeah, right.
An hour?
Yeah, what's he got them all in his pocket? He's got like, well.
He's just filling up.
I think I know where he's got them, but again, we're almost there. We're almost there where he's got the Zippo stuff and everything else is located.
It's a ghost flame.
Yeah.
So like you said, they're walking through the umbrella tunnels and he basically.
Yeah, they pass Project Metal Beast.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, he's there. He's fucking up. What's his face? Barry Boswick in the corner. He's giving him the old fucking claw.
Picking him up, chokeslam him. But you're right. Yeah, they're walking down with the light and they're plot dumping again.
Yeah. And it's like he keeps going on about his brother and like, you need to get out of here. And like, they're all dead. There's nothing you could do. Blah, blah, blah.
Well, he slips up here, too, because he has like kind of a moment where like. He has some kind of thing. You think it's like a heart problem. Again, it makes more sense in a minute.
Yeah.
But he's like, oh, I need to sit down for a minute. Yeah. And she's like, are you okay? And that's where, you know, he mentions the thing about the brother for like the fifth time.
Yeah.
But she's like, oh, yeah, Hideki, right? And he's like,
how did you know that? He's like, you told me. He's like, oh, yeah.
Anyway, can I have the lighter? Just go that way. Because now that I know that you know that, you need to just get the fuck out of here, please. Just get the fuck out of here. She's like, I can go with you. I'm not scared. He's like, I got it.
There's a weird part too here because he's like, she's like, I don't even know why anybody would want to kill me or want to like meet me. Like, I'm not even famous.
It's or
whatever.
A late show, but yeah, it's like whatever.
Yeah, and he's like, I don't know. Maybe they just want to have, maybe they want to see you naked. And she's like, well, they could just come down to the news station and meet me. He's like, well, they can't go down to the news station to see you naked, can they?
Which was a kind of an awkward exchange, and you even see in her face, like, okay,
whatever
like
you
that.
Say.
What a weird thing to just randomly say to someone you just met.
Anyway, he gives her the gun and gives her the lighter, or she gives him back the lighter, and she gets out. She's out of the woods, because she fucking runs out and gets to the car.
Which is, it's now like daytime or, you know, very early morning.
It's very early morning. She gets to the car. And there's the bodies of, she finds Rhea, and the fucking gimp is in the fucking car dead. And she goes to start the car, and she finds out, like, it's all gross inside.
Yeah.
So she ducks down behind the thing because she sees the killer coming. Dude walks up and just takes the two bodies.
Yeah.
And you're drags like, okay. them off. Hmm. She takes a little sip of fucking,
the last little
kombu's fucking Pepsi or whatever he's got in there.
From his hamburger.
Yeah. And then she has this moment where she could leave, but she doesn't. She like puts her hair up in a ponytail, cocks the gun, grabs a flashlight, gets a little I don't know what snack, and then heads back in because she's gonna take revenge about her friends being killed.
Which, listen, I'm there for that, but you know, I'm not the biggest defender of the boys in blue, but maybe get some fucking backup. I don't know.
Fuck that, dude. Like, everybody's dead. Just get out of there.
I get that, too. That's also an option. I'd at least get a little help. I mean, it ends up working out okay for her. But I get me a shotgun. Get me an Uzi. Get me something else besides this little baby revolver that I don't even know for a fact actually shoots real rounds.
Or even is loaded, because how many times did he shoot that fucking
more
gun?
Than six times.
Yeah.
Six times?
So she goes back in and she goes down the tunnel and there's this weird like glowing light.
And a lot of good Dutch angles.
It's fucking great because she goes up and she goes up into this room. And again, just to bring the Tetsuo back like full circle.
Yeah.
There's like these electrical wires and conduit that look like veins coming down on these like pillars.
Yeah, that was. Almost like, yeah, Tetsu is a good example, like Blade Runner-esque.
Yeah, it's fucking cool, man. And she ends up going into Richard Brake's room full of VHS tapes.
Oh, he's got that disgusting baby bottle.
He's got the baby bottle. He's in the VHS room. She doesn't know who it is yet, but she finds this room full of TVs and shit. And the voice you hear in the beginning of the movie about, mother, wake up, Hideki. It's time for school. You don't want to be late. It's a recording that goes off at like 6 in the morning. So there's like time intervals when this fucking recording goes off.
Also, because I already blew the load in my shorts. You can't see it on camera, because we skipped it. The reveal is here. The glasses guy's the fucking killer. Because
we're getting there.
They show it right before this, asshole.
I know they fucking do, but I'm trying to tell a story.
But what, dude? I'm going in the order of the film.
I'm trying to...
Because before she gets to this murder hole or whatever the fuck you want to call it, they show this guy with his fucking 45 empty Miller lights and his fucking Wild Turkey putting war paint on.
I know, but I wanted it to reveal to the people watching the fucking show.
I revealed it as the film did, as it was intended.
What I was going to say is that she's putting it all together because she's looking at the mirror and there's picture of the woman and like a kid.
And the kid with and the pins in it.
And between that, the pictures of the video of her on the screens and then the recording going off, she puts it all together that he is obsessed with her because whoever the killer is thinks she looks like their mother.
Right. Which in the beginning, they literally say that. You just might have forgot about it.
But there's no brother in those pictures. It's just one kid.
Right.
So she hears the killer coming, opens the door. It's sunglasses guy. She knows who it is now.
But he's in the Prowler getup.
And you hear...
Right, she knows
the child voice talking to him.
Yeah.
So it's him talking to somebody else, and the child voice is like, I want to kill more people or something. And dude is like, oh, we already killed 4 people today. That's enough. We're good.
We better quote him.
And he's like, oh, you let that reporter go? And he's like, yeah, I let the reporter go. She's like, no, she did it. She's standing right there in the room.
Yeah, there's also some like stuff where like he's like being thrown around by like a ghostly
being
presence
pushed
or something,
around
like
stuff?
A mime or something. You don't really know.
Yeah, and you're like, is it a ghost?
But you're right. Then he comes in the room and he sits down and he does pull the mask off.
He is so fucking cool about it. He's like, oh, you figured it out, huh? Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to meet you because I liked you. I killed all your friends.
I wasn't really thrilled about it. It really wasn't me, technically, by the way.
I did it because I didn't have a choice.
Well, what do you mean by that? Yeah, you know, Hideki, how can I explain this? Remember that Malignant reference from earlier?
It's coming full circle, baby. You think it's a split personality.
Right, exactly.
Point. So the guy's just crazy, and you can hear the voice. But what separates it is the fact that he's like, just kill me. And she's like, I'm not going to kill you and take you to the cops. He's like, yeah, good luck. Then the voice comes out again, and she can hear it. So it's not like...
It's a recording.
Story,
or something,
it's not a recording. It's not story. It's not storytelling or anything for the viewer. And he ends up freaking out at her and runs at her, and she shoots him right in the chest.
Right.
And you're like, oh shit, he's dead.
I guess it works.
Well, she shook up because she was going to take him to jail or whatever. Man, this is the part when we were kids, we were watching this and we're like, what the fuck? His chest starts bubbling and bursting, and this giant fucking sack of shit bursts out of his chest and lurches out next to him onto the side of him.
Yeah. Again, Malignant. And basket case.
And she watches this fucking baby fetus come out of this sack.
Total Recall comes to mind. Man. The succulent. Well, I actually hold that thought.
It's got a weird Akira tie to it too. Because this baby is its own entity that's alive, and it also has telekinesis. As we find out, it's not
telekinesis, technically. It's pyrokinesis.
Well, it's pyrokinesis and telekinesis.
Does he have telekinesis?
Yeah, because that's how he shot those bolts without the crossbow, and how...
I didn't even think
about that. The gate closed without... Yeah, the gate closed without it. He's pushing dude
mind
around.
Shit is the
point.
Yeah. Okay.
At least I think so. That's why it reads that way.
I definitely was leaning more in because they purposely show, like you said, those fireworks, and there's a lot of explosions at the end here. I was leaning more pyro, but it could just be brain shit. General.
I mean, if he has influence to make shit explode, I think he has the power to like
make
move shit with his mind.
But that's his power. He's floating in the fucking air like Jesus or something.
With its umbilical cord, and he's blowing shit up all around Nami, and he ends up like strangling her with his fucking umbilical cord.
Amazed from the ceiling.
Oh, so good, yeah.
Another member to the fucking squad, guys. The suckling, yes! The baby orca peanut.
Prepubescent mutant babies. Yeah. Prepubescent mutant babies.
Gotta make that fucking shirt now.
Oh, yeah.
MovieDumpsterPodcast.com. It's coming eventually.
We got the orca baby. We got the suckling baby.
Now this one.
Now we got Hideki. Now we just need to add plutonium baby to the mix.
Yeah, that. And
then we have our four prepubescent mutant baby.
Yeah, and for me, I'm sure we're missing one. I'm sure the being was
involved. Unborn. Oh, the being was unborn. I'm sorry. It was the being.
We'll design it eventually. We've been talking about it on and off for years. It'll happen.
There's a bunch of mutant babies. I mean,
it could just be like 10 of them. Who gives a fuck? There's so many of them.
The army will grow once we get to monsters.
That's true. Oh my God.
And we got to do the unborn.
Well, and you know, dead alive, obviously.
Oh, yes. Selwyn is in there too.
This has been your mutant baby corner.
Minute.
On movie. It's been a minute, so.
They got all those fake. They got all those fake IDs, dude, to get in the Chud Club, remember?
They got the baby club, baby. The mutant baby club. They're all, you know, even though they're babies, they're mutant babies, so they can drink.
With their bandanas on.
Yeah. They're drinking hot milk at the bar. You know, some of them that are a little bit more disconfigured, they have a little acid and, you know, toxic
they
waste in there.
Yeah. It wasn't slime, it was ooze, right.
The peanut gets like straight water, seawater in a cup.
Oh, he gets like seal blood or something, right?
That's the mixer. Yeah. The Bloody Mary. That's his version. Its version. I guess we don't ever find out. Richard Harris just scoops it into the fucking ocean.
Can you commit a sin against a mutant baby?
Can you commit a sin against a margarita? We're going to find out.
So, Sunglasses grabs his brother by the umbilical cord.
He shoves him back into
rips him off and then stuffs him back into the hole and then commits fucking seppuku on this motherfucker.
He hits the ground and explodes like a fucking bomb.
Dude, he puts it in, he cuts himself, falls to the ground, and ignites into flames.
That's what I'm saying?
Yeah. So he's just a charbroiled motherfucker at this point.
And Nami's not even sure whether she should take a shit or whine or watch. She doesn't know what the fuck's going on. She's like, I guess I need to leave. So she starts to gingerly walk away like, I guess I won.
Hideki, like, fucking...
He goes full Tarman.
He reanimates the corpse and goes after and, like, chokes her.
Oh, yeah.
And also,
like, implies that he was just waiting for his brother to die the whole time, even though the whole time he's like, don't take my brother, don't take my brother. And he's like, well, drop that sack of potatoes.
Oh, that's right, because she, like, the baby's like, you killed my brother.
Yeah.
So she stabs him in the fucking eye with a piece of glass and he goes out the window.
A lot of eye shit.
And the burnt husk of her brother is strewn all over the place, like broken.
But you don't see the blob, the baby blob anywhere.
No.
So she's just like, huh. Cut to her in the hospital.
She has, because he was burned, he had like these marks on her neck and she rips these things, like the burnt skin off her neck.
That was cool.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
But yeah, she wakes up a la like, you know, Friday or any of those other movies.
Oh, this is
a million horror movies
Friday,
at the time.
Fucking American Werewolf in London.
Hellraiser 2.
There's a fucking cop in there. And he's like lighting her up a fucking cigarette. And he's like, yeah, so what happened? You were talking about this baby. There was no baby. Let's just leave that part out when you tell the
story.
There
was no Jason. You
know? Yeah. There was no boy in the lake. There was no boy inside that guy.
Those sequels have nothing to do with it. What sequels, Doc? Don't worry about it. Hideki 2.
Hideki, Evil Dead Trap 2, but it's not the same thing. Don't worry about it.
But you're kind of like watching. She's like, all right, I guess we're getting a little bit of an epilogue here. Okay, I'm kind of interested in this, but I expect, like, you know, she beat him. It's done.
Yeah, it's like The Howling.
It's like
fucking Dee Wallace telling the story on TV.
Exactly. Or Mrs. Doubtfire at the end, honestly.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, I'm a man.
great comparison of disgusting horror movie out of Japan, Mrs. Doubtfire. Okay.
So she's on her fucking public access show talking about the story. She's like, and
she's
then
about those dinosaurs, obviously.
Yeah, Raptor coming back as well. Anyway.
Sorry.
My bad. She's like, yeah, and then four of my friends died, and that's the end. Hope you enjoyed the show. Bye.
And then she's like in the back, like kind of just getting ready to leave for the day, and you're like, all right. Then she gets like a pain in her throat. She's like,
No, she gets a package first.
Some stagehand
like gives her a bag. She's like, here, somebody dropped this off for you. Said you'd lost this. Here you go.
Right. Okay, that's important. You're right.
Yeah. She opens it up. It's the fucking lighter. It drops the thing. It says RPD on it.
She's got to get that back to
Leon!
The commissioner. Or the captain, rather. Yeah. She grabs her neck, starts freaking out. You almost feel like it's a PTSD thing at first, but then like her stomach starts smoking.
Oh, dude, this is great because you hear the baby and he's like, oh yeah, you thought you could get away or some shit.
Yeah.
Her fucking heart like explodes and then she falls to the ground and her legs are spread and this fucking baby punches its way out of her vagina and it's its whole head. And she's screaming and carrying on, and it's just like, mama. And then it fucking, like,
it does
ends.
An inverted freeze for, like, 10 seconds.
It's like the end of Bride of Chucky.
A little bit, yeah. Hence why maybe you couldn't get a sequel with the exact same... I mean, you could have made it work, in my opinion,
The fucking baby's on a... He's run amok.
It's a reverse suckling is basically what I was going to say earlier, but I didn't want to say it yet.
Well, it could do that Jason thing where like he's still a fetus, but he's fully functioning and he could just go inside another person.
He's a fully functioning fetus.
One fully functioning fetus. Telekinesis. Thanks, Rucker.
Yeah, I do want to see the sequel now, just because even though you said it has nothing to do with it, I do wonder just on a base level how they translate the second one.
It has nothing to do with it, but I believe the second one is about this woman who sees the ghost or has this image of this little boy, and she commits all these murders, and she wakes up not having any memory of
it. Oh, so like Malignant.
That's why I said in the beginning.
Go watch fucking Malignant. It's actually pretty good, even though we're ripping on it. I liked it more than Joe, but fine is the key word.
It's fine, capital F.
It's definitely not James Wan's best movie, but it's better than many other things that have tried this concept.
In my opinion, watch Evil Dead Trap. Watch Basket Case. Better movies.
Well, not wrong. But yeah, that was Evil Dead Trap. Kind of just fucks off from there. You get that Japanese credits on this version. So again, I don't know who was who.
So yeah, where are we putting Evil Dead Trap?
This is on the shelf. Been on the shelf ever since I saw it. But
you know
Just needed a little reminder. When I watched it the first time, I did rate the first time for the show, I guess technically the second time, I did rate it a little higher. I for my personal rating, I gave it like a 5 out of 5. But like on the rewatch, I was like, it feels like a little bit more like a cozy 4 for me.
Yeah.
Just because I think that towards the end there, until you get to that third act, there is that like 20-minute stretch, which I do like. But it really slows down. Like, you kind of start to be taken out of the film a little. And again, like, the rape scene. I don't want to keep going back to that because I did just say earlier in the review that I thought it actually was done well. But that is also something I'm like, I get what you're going for. But that always is, like, in the back of my head, I'm like, I could have done without that. But I also understand what they're going for. So it doesn't bother me that much, but I will mention it. The effects are amazing. The fucking acting's top-notch, in my opinion, for this kind of film especially.
Sure.
And you know, again, I said it many times in this review already, but the editing, the camera work, the music, even though that theme gets a little annoying sometimes, it is a very good theme. So I kind of let it slide. I'm like, all right, it's the 20th time in a row you played it, but I'm tapping my foot. I'm feeling it. Some very nitpicky.
And all around the world. Yeah. La, 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 la.
I mean, it doesn't take much for my personal rating again. Like, I talk about this occasionally on the show. I don't like to always go into that, but little things will knock the rating down for me. But 9 times out of 10, it's got to be something pretty major. And again, it's my personal rating. It's on the shelf already. It's high up there regardless.
Oh, yeah, babies.
I'm just saying, little nitpicky shit. Highly recommend this one. Check it out on any version of these, I suppose. But yeah, this Blu-ray was a really nice transfer.
I don't even think you can get this anymore. Don't even try looking for this fucking thing, because I'm sure that this set is probably astronomical on eBay.
Maybe get the DVD.
I mean, if it's not, grab it, fine. Mm. But when you have this beautiful new Unearthed Classics Blu-ray out of Evil Dead Trap, just grab the Blu-ray.
Yeah. Like I said, I think I said this on the episode. If I didn't, I'm saying it now. I did notice a couple times the subtitles did fuck up like towards like the hour 20 mark.
Yeah.
But maybe that was just what I was watching it on. But super minor nitpick. I mean, maybe that was is a make or break for some people. And again, check it out for yourself. Maybe it was just my machine. But did not ruin the experience for me at all. I feel like I'm starting to ramble a little bit, but I guess what I'm saying is this is a really fun film. And yeah, it's gross out, but I love it. And not to say I don't like gross out things, but I guess I'll leave it there before I just say something else really fucking stupid.
This is on the shelf for me, 110%, dude. It was great. It was a lot of fun coming back to revisit. I was absolutely baffled by how giallo the movie was. I just didn't remember it like that.
Yeah.
And then watching it, I'm like, holy shit. That's not a bad thing at all.
No.
It's a blender. It's a lot of things that I like about different genres blended up into one movie, and I really dig it because it's touted as a slasher, and it kind of is a slasher, but it's more like a paranormal mystery thriller.
Yeah. Again, I think the paranormal stuff's definitely window dressing, but it is there.
I don't know what you would call it. Supernatural, okay?
Okay, fair enough.
Not paranormal. Well, I guess paranormal, too. I don't know. The telekinesis and crazy mutant
supernatural?
Fetuses?
Supernatural,
sure.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm still not sure. You were saying you felt like it was paranormal at the end there, but I just feel like it was that weird psychic shit that's not hyper-explained.
Yeah, well, not a lot of it's hyper-explained.
Not a lot of it's
explained at all, and like, were they an experiment at this military facility? Because he says, we used to run around here as a child all the time.
Yeah.
Was he exposed to something that fucked him up and turned him into that?
He does say something at one point that he was used to being around concrete walls all the time. So you're right, yeah.
Yeah, like, was he part of some kind of not a PSYOP, but, like, you know, programs like, I always forget the fucking name of it, dude. The one that Stranger Things is based on.
Oh, I have no idea.
Somebody's yelling at me right now.
I love Stranger Things. I have no idea.
I keep forgetting what the fuck it's called off the top of my head. Anyway.
Something in that vein, though.
Case in point is, it is like dripping with atmosphere. Mm. Every shot is intentional and the camera work is fucking fantastic. And like you said, the editing is just, it's razor sharp. It is such an enjoyable watch, but I will agree with you that, once we get to the end a plot point happens and then nothing happens. And then there's too much time in between. Right. Those two points for me personally.
Well, it's like they kill everybody and they're like, well, we still have this other part of the story we need to tell with the main character. So here it is. But they didn't the pacing's a little.
It could have came a little bit sooner, but I understand why they did it, so that they're alone. Oh, yeah. So you don't have any interference from the other characters, or, hey, where's that other character? What are they doing?
It makes sense, but I agree with you.
It's fucking brutal and shocking and scary. And if you haven't seen this in a while, or if you've never seen it before, you're going to be on the edge of your seat for a lot of it. And if you got the stomach for it and that shit gets you hot, this is it. It's really good. And that's pretty much it. I've said all the nice things I could say about this film. It's fucking great. Absolutely, indefinitely. So yeah, if you've seen Evil Dead Trap, let us know in the comments what you thought of the movie. If you haven't seen it, if you want to see it, and what you thought of the episode.
And like we said earlier in the episode, if you want some more Movie Dumpster content, including ad-free versions of the audio version of this show, head over to patreon.com/moviedumpster if you'd like to support us for as little as $2.
And for no money at all, if you're watching on YouTube, hit that like button. And subscribe if you haven't. We'd really appreciate it. And if you're listening on your favorite podcast app, do us a favor and leave that 5-star review, because it really helps us reach a wider audience and, you know, get more dumpster dwellers for the community.
And as always, for updates on the show and for what's coming up on it, make sure to follow us at Movie Dumpster on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook.
So that's it. That's Evil Dead Trap from 1988, directed by Toshiharu Ikeda. I'm Joel Escola.
And I'm Sean O'Rourke.
Thanks for visiting the dumpster.